Welcome to Ringside with Air Fiend, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Avalanche beat writer for Colorado Hockey Now, podcaster for Mile High Sports, and I'm coming to you here Tuesday afternoon, the day after the Avalanche, and the Avs are off today, so no practice to report on, but the day after yet another loss, yet another six goals, and yet another tough game for the Colorado Avalanche, losing to the New York Islanders 6-2, coached by Patrick Waugh, and the Avalanche are now 0-3 on the season, heading into a matchup with the Boston Bruins tomorrow night at Ball Arena once again. So there's a lot to report on this game. And I'm just going to start from the beginning, and the beginning being the morning skate. When we chatted with Patrick Waugh following the Islanders' skate, and I'm sure you guys have seen the videos of it. It was about a little over 24 hours ago now when he met with us in the hallways of Ball Arena outside the Avalanche and the Islanders' dressing rooms, somewhere around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock p.m. on Monday. And I remember when the Islanders were taking the ice, Patty jumped onto the ice, and you kind of saw him do one of those looks where he looked up and he looked around and kind of just admired all the banners and just the atmosphere, or not really the atmosphere, but the aura of Ball Arena, an empty arena, 18,000 seats, nobody's there yet. And he looked up, he looked at the banners, he went to the right, he went to the left, and kind of like soaked in the moment. It reminded me kind of the 2023 season when Nazem Kadri came back. And he jumped onto the ice and did a loop. And then he stopped at the blue line and he looked up and his eyes locked with that 2022 Stanley Cup banner. It kind of reminded me of that. You saw Patty do the look and he looked around at all the banners and you saw him kind of scouring through the division titles, the Stanley Cups, the jersey banner, the Pierre Lacroix banner, and it was a really fascinating moment because, we've had two chapters of Patrick Waugh here in Denver. We've had the goalie Patrick Waugh, and then we've had the coach Patrick Waugh. And hell, as coach Patrick Waugh, we had the one that came out in his rookie season and invigorated the career of Eric Johnson, saw Semyon Varlamov stand on his head and play out of his mind, saw Nathan MacKinnon come in as a rookie and be an instant hit with the Avalanche and in the playoffs. Saw Paul Stastny put up great numbers. Saw Gabe Landeskog put up great numbers. Made a career out of seemingly nothing for guys like Nick Holden and Nate Gennon, and brought back Alex Tanguay. And, he didn't play many games that year, but he was around for the Avalanche for the first 10 or 12 games or so. And it was, Ryan O'Reilly shifted to the wing and he played incredible on that line with Matt Duchene. It was such a fun year. And then there were the other 2 years. And then chapter three, the other 2 years, obviously, where they missed the playoffs both times and got the 10th overall pick both times. One year they drafted Mikko Rantanen. The next year they drafted Tyson Jost. And then chapter three of the Patrick Waugh coaching era, obviously August of 2016, just up and quits, calls Joe Sakic, calls the Avalanche and says he's done. And when they tried to convince him to reconsider, when they tried to convince him to give him time, to give them time so that they can announce it and, handle it properly from a PR standpoint, Patrick said okay and hung up. And then a few minutes later, got on the phone again, called Joe Sakic and said, I'm not waiting, and had his own third-party PR firm released the statement before the Avalanche could. And then it ended there. But Patty will always be connected to this city. He will always be connected to this place. Like he said yesterday, I played here for 8 years. I coached here for 3 years. This is a man who's almost 60 years old who spent 11 years of his life living in Denver. For some kid from Montreal, a Francophone from Canada, it's a long time. And two completely different parts of his life, if you all remember. It was 10 years to the day he announced his retirement in 03 compared to the day that he announced he was introduced as a head coach of the Avalanche in a same room, down at Pepsi Center, now Ball Arena. And I just loved that even though he's been back before, even though he came back as a coach and then left again, and now he's finally back as head coach of the New York Islanders. I keep wanting to say Ottawa Senators because I feel like for 2 years there were rumors that he was going to coach the Ottawa Senators and it just never came to be. But even though he had come back now as head coach of the New York Islanders, it was still one of those things with him where, you know, it's the memories. It's that feeling hasn't gone away. I remember last year when the Montreal Canadiens welcomed the New York Islanders and they had what pretty much felt like a Patrick Waugh ceremony for him from the fans, from the Jumbotron and everything in his return. And I was like, what is this all about? You know, Patty was traded in 1995. He's come back many times as a player. I was there the night he came back as a head coach with the Colorado Avalanche in the 2013-14 season. Weird memory. Thomas Vanek was a Montreal Canadiens trade deadline acquisition. Scored a hat trick that day on the Colorado Avalanche, and the Habs won. But I remember Patty coming back as head coach of the Avalanche, and he did it for 3 years. You know, it wasn't for 1 year. He did in 2014, 15, 16. 8 years later, he's back in the NHL, comes back with the Islanders, and Montreal did this, like, whole thing for him as if it was the first time. And I remember thinking, like, what is this about? But then hearing Patty and seeing him walk in and just the aura, the energy around him, and seeing him look up at the rafters that first time he stepped on the ice during morning skate with the New York Islanders, and I was like, okay, now I get it. Montreal and Colorado are two places he holds near and dear to his heart, and that'll never change. Every time he's back here in Denver, it's going to mean something. So it was nice to talk to Patty. It was nice to hear him say things like, I never took, you know, I wish I did things differently when it came to leaving the team, and I never respected the position of head coach back then, you know, talking back to 2013 to 16 when he was a head coach here for the Colorado Avalanche. He had some great things in there to say about, I asked him specifically, I was hoping he would touch on him specifically, but I asked him specifically about Eric Johnson. You know, EJ is someone that we know. He always says Patrick Waugh helped invigorate his career and make it what it was. And I said, were you happy to see him win a Stanley Cup? And he said, all those guys, you know, I was so happy to see all of them win, you know. I loved his quote. He said something along the lines of, and I tweeted the video. He's looking at me and he goes, you know, when Colorado wins the Stanley Cup, I don't think, oh gosh, the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup. No, no, no. They're like Montreal to me. When they win the Stanley Cup, I'm happy. I picked up the phone and texted Joe and told Joe right away and congratulated him. I was so happy to see all those guys win. And one of my favorite parts of his presser after, you know, he kind of had a little bit of a humble pie to him. It was really fascinating to see Waugh speak like that. But one of my favorite parts of that presser was somebody asked him about Nathan MacKinnon and said, when you see him doing what he's doing and winning the Hart Trophy, you know, what does that mean to you? And he says, it makes me really happy because I know that I was, you know, I forget what the exact verbiage was, but basically had I not been here, we would have never drafted Nathan MacKinnon. And I'm here to tell you guys, he's right. You know, the Avalanche, there was a lot of the media hoopla around Seth Jones because of his dad, the connection to Denver. But Nathan MacKinnon tore him to shreds at the Memorial Cup, and Nathan MacKinnon and Jonathan Drouin and the Halifax Mooseheads came back from an 0-3 deficit against the Quebec Remparts, coached by Patty Waugh, I believe not the 2013 season, but I believe it was the 2012 season, 2 years before MacKinnon's draft year, if I'm not mistaken. So Patty had seen those guys, and he wanted one of the forwards. He was very adamant. I remember back then, you know, before the draft even came around, like weeks before the draft, Patrick was publicly making statements about how it's MacKinnon, Barkov, and Drouin before it's Seth Jones. You know, I'm taking one of the forwards. And then it became apparent and very clear after the Avalanche won the draft lottery and they knew they were going to get the number one pick. He was very open about, I'm taking Nathan MacKinnon. And it was because he saw him in juniors and he knew this guy was going to be something. If I'm not mistaken, the rest of the Avalanche brass wanted Alex Barkov. And the thing is, Alexander Barkov's an incredible player. He's this generation's Patrice Bergeron. He just won a Stanley Cup, and I would argue he's probably going to have a, maybe, we'll see. I think he probably can do what Patrice Bergeron did for longer, and Patrice did it for a very freaking long time. So, you know, the Avalanche wouldn't have done the wrong thing by selecting Barkov, but MacKinnon is a different kind of beast. It's kind of similar to, you know, comparing Miro Haskin and Cale Makar, where had Dallas taken Cale Makar, you're not complaining about having Miro Haskinen, but you're happy you have Cale. And, you know, that's still up in the air. Who's going to have the better career, Cale Makar or Miro Haskinen? Who's going to have more Stanley Cups at the end, Nathan MacKinnon or Alex Barkov? They're two completely different kinds of players, but Patty wanted MacKinnon. So I do believe him, and that is a thing when he says that. But it was so unbelievably Patrick Waugh for him to say, had I not been here, we wouldn't have drafted this guy. So of course I'm happy. So that was great. It was also funny while we were talking to Patty, Mikko Rantanen and Jonathan Drouin came out of the Avalanche room. You know, they had finished their morning skate routine and they had gotten showered and done all of their rehab and everything and stretching. And they had their, like, you know, dinners to go because, or whatever, lunch to go, because the Avalanche obviously feeds their players and sends them home. And they walk right past the presser and you kind of see them both glance at Patty. And I'm like, there are two guys with two different connections. There's Jonathan Drouin, who played with Nathan MacKinnon, was never coached by Patty Waugh, but played against him, played in Montreal for a very long time, knows what the name Patrick Waugh means. French-Canadian, Jonathan Drouin. So there's one connection with Patty. And then there's, of course, Nathan MacKinnon, who had that nine-game stint with the Avalanche as an 18-year-old under head coach Patty Waugh before he was sent back to the American Hockey League before he came the following year to be a full-time Av under head coach Jared Bednar. So that was really cool. It was really funny to hear Jared Bednar, when somebody asked him about Patrick Waugh, he said, I owe him a big hug and a steak dinner because, you know, everybody does what's right for them, but him leaving set me up for a lifetime of an opportunity that I, you know, didn't know when I was going to get it or if I was going to get it. And it was just really funny. He's like, I owe him a hug and a steak dinner. Have you ever met Patrick? No. Have you ever spoken to Patrick? No. So it was really great to have Patty. Now that I've talked about Patrick Waugh for 12 minutes, let's talk about the Avalanche getting creamed by Patrick Waugh's team, which ain't known for scoring goals, and put up six on the Avs, obviously one of them on the empty net, but good Lord. Cale Makar, to go back to that conversation, had about the worst hockey game I've seen him play in a long time, if not ever. I wrote about the good and bad from the game. Avalanche fall to 0-3 after glaring mistakes from top star. Take a wild guess who that top star was. Cale did not have a good game, and he was very, very, very quick to accept responsibility during the post game when we spoke to him. He said something along the lines of some really stupid, childish mistakes, and those are things you got to learn from. I got to be better. A lot of that game is on me. So he openly took responsibility for it. And somebody tried to ask him if the absence of Devon Taves, which I'll get into that for in a second, woof. But the absence of Devon Taves, does that have anything to do with, you know, you having the game that you did? And he said, no, absolutely not. You know, I should be able to play with any of these guys. And he's right. He's Cale Makar. He should be able to line up with any of these guys and have a good game. And that just wasn't the case. So Cale directly leads to three goals against, three turnovers, three bad plays. Well, not necessarily turnovers. The first one, he had an opportunity to get the puck out of the zone. He doesn't. The Avalanche get hemmed into their own zone. Long shift. He's gassed as Brock Nelson is dangling Georgiev out of his skates and putting it past him to make it 3-1. And then when the Avalanche get a power play and an opportunity to make it a game, Cale Makar has a puck in the defensive zone, tape-to-tape pass picked off by Brock Nelson, goes in and scores and makes it 4-1 with a shorthanded goal. And then in the third period, the Avalanche make it 4-2. They're starting to buzz a little bit. They're getting a little bit of their feet under them. And then Cale, for some reason, in front of the net, in front of Georgiev, follows Duclair behind the net, completely leaves him. Duclair comes out the other side, takes the puck, scores 5-2. And then, of course, the 6-2 goal was the empty netter. Brutal showing from Cale Makar. He's got to bounce back from that. The Avalanche are in tough right now. There's no other way to shake it. You know, when you look at the Edmonton Oilers and you look at the fact that Leon Draisaitl has one out of the three goals that they have, they're also playing the Philadelphia Flyers tonight, so they have a little bit of a chance to rebound. But you look at him having one of their three goals. You look at Connor McDavid having one 5-on-5 point, and it's a secondary assist. you look at all the issues they're having, but you look at it and you say, you know, Connor McDavid is not going to put up one assist every three games. Hell, we're not going to score three goals every three games. It's fixable. The Avalanche, it's also fixable because let's face it, as shitty as goaltending has been, both Georgiev and Anenin, you know, Eustis coming in relief two games, so not really getting a start yet. Maybe Boston's his game. Maybe Anaheim on Friday is his game. As crappy as it's been to see the goaltending do what it's done, it works the same way for the Avalanche. Colorado ain't getting below 800 goaltending the rest of the year. Again, below 800. McDavid. Georgiev and Anenin are both in the 700s for save percentage. That's not going to happen all year. So, of course, that's going to get better. The issue that I have with the Avalanche is these injuries are piling on way too quickly, and I believe the number now is $28 million. $28 million of their lineup is on the shelf. Last year, whenever I talked about injuries, I never included, or not often did I include, Gabe Landeskog because he was on LTIR all year, and the Avalanche used his $7 million. That's no longer the case. Gabe Landeskog's out. Of course, obviously, it kind of cancels out because Val Nichushkin is on like the non-roster right now, so his money technically doesn't count. But I'm still counting him because they're going to activate him, and he's going to come back here very soon, hopefully, within a month. So, no Gabe Landeskog, $7 million. No Val Nichushkin, $6.125 million. Then you're missing Arturi Lehkonen, $4.5 million. Then Jonathan Drouin gets hurt opening night, $2.5 million. In the second game, Devon Taves gets hurt, $7.25 million. You're missing three of your top four, top six wing... Jeez. Three of your top four wingers that are going to play in the top six, plus Gabe Landeskog, who I'm going to go ahead and just call him a third liner just to make it easier. Plus you're missing your top line defenseman that's going to play with Cale Makar. That's a lot. Teams are not supposed to have that many injuries all at once. You're not supposed to be missing three of the four wingers that make up your top six. Especially when you're trying to replace them with rookies. You're trying to weather the storm by making your third line center a winger. Something that I thought the Avalanche should have tried many, many times last year. Now they finally can. It's tough right now. And do I think the Avalanche are in trouble this year? No. I still think this is a playoff team, but I think it's going to be hard for them to weather this storm if the injuries continue. Because the reality is, Devon Taves should be back. If not Wednesday, then hopefully Friday. It sounded like there was some hope there. Jonathan Drouin, I'm a little intrigued by what's happening there. That seems a little concerning because Jared said he's getting reevaluated. He might have a broken bone, something off. I've seen the replay of when he got hit by Nick Hague in Vegas, something on his ribs. Who the hell knows what the deal is there? But if Jonathan Drouin's out for any longer, that's going to be tough. And then you have Arturi Lehkonen, who's going to be reevaluated at the end of the month. And then, of course, Val Nichushkin, who 4 weeks from Wednesday, I think, is the first official day he can get reinstated. So there's a lot going on there. And the Avalanche, you know, ultimately, we'll see what happens with Drouin. Like, I'm genuinely curious if we're going to get bad news on Drouin. I don't know. I'm just guessing. No insider information there. But I'm really curious if he has a more serious injury after what Jared kind of hinted at with the longer timeline. And I just don't know because he has to get reevaluated comment that he made at the end of the game. So assuming Drouin is not a long-term thing, you're going to get those guys back. And I'm talking Lehkonen, Taves, Drouin, and Nichushkin within the next month or so. The problem is, which is a problem that's always with the Avalanche, and I'm not talking about the Gabe Landeskog problem. Let's push him aside for now. The problem is not getting other guys hurt while waiting for these four guys. And if that's the way it shakes out, the Avalanche will be absolutely fine. But if by the time these guys are back, Mittelstadt's hurt and Gerard and Manson and Georgiev is, you know, playing well and then gets hurt, like, then it gets tough. The season can spiral really quickly. 0-3, you're not in trouble. But you are kind of keeping an eye on how you're playing, which the guys that are playing are making a lot of defensive mistakes. Obviously, you're missing talent, but the talent that's remaining in the lineup, it almost seems like they're trying to do too much to not make a mistake, which is leading to mistakes, which might define the Cale Makar game for the ages that we saw against the Islanders. It's a really, really weird three games. Trying to figure out exactly what's wrong with this team and how to cure it is hard right now. Because of the guys they're missing. Because every game, we'll see if anybody comes out of the Islanders game injured. I don't think so. But your first two games, you had two guys come out injured. And it was a top-line winger and a top-line defenseman. So this is ultimately something to keep an eye on, obviously, with the Avalanche. I do want to throw a reminder out there that the 22-23 season, after losing to Chicago in January, Colorado was 27-3. They won 20 out of 40 games. And they ended the year with over 50 wins. So the season is not lost. When they were 27-3, they were outside of the playoffs. They were ninth in the West. But then they won 30 of like their next 42 or something like that. Or 30, actually I think it was 32 of their next 42. The season is not over, but you just got to hope the injuries, while you're waiting for the guys that are out to come back, the guys that are healthy don't leave the lineup. If that's not kind of like the defining, the most Avalanche thing you can ever think of, kind of reminds me of last year, how Jonathan Drouin's finally healthy and he's going to come join them in game 4 against the Dallas Stars and Val Nichushkin suspended. Zach Parise's no longer going to be in the top six. You can stick him on the third line with Miles Wood and Ross Colton and finally place him where he should, but Val Nichushkin suspended. So let's hope that's not the case now. Oh, and then to make matters worse, Devontaeves was sick and didn't play that game either. Woof. Memories from May, 5 months ago. So I'll put a stop in the podcast here, but I will say this. I think the Avalanche are going to have a really good game against the Boston Bruins. I know that's a tough opponent, but I think they're going to come out well in that game. I think it's put up or shut up time. I think they're going to win that game and then, you know, hope to beat the Anaheim Ducks on Friday, which is an easier game. And suddenly you're 2-3. You're feeling a little bit better. You start to get your feet under you. Hopefully your goaltending is figuring it out a little bit. Maybe Kaapo Kähkönen's here by then. You have three options and you're getting some guys back in the lineup. But with that, we'll see what happens tomorrow. Again, it's Tuesday afternoon. The Avalanche play the Boston Bruins on Wednesday, game 3 of a 4-game homestand, trying to find their first win of the season. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. We out ya. Yeah.